As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that enables your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said. Done.
Coming up on episode 253 of Wheel Bearings, we've got first drives of the Honda HR-V and the Cadillac Lyriq, as well as the Cadillac CT4-V Blackwing, the Acura Integra, the Polestar 5 prototype, and Honda's or Ford's new dynamic driving simulator. All coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 253 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin from the Fast Women Podcast.
And I am Roberto Balder from Engadget.
I like how you said that. That sounds fancy.
It does, doesn't it?
Engadget.
And what pray tell have you been driving, Mrs. Wakelin?
Mrs. Wakelin, well, that sounds very formal. Mrs. Ooh. Wakelin. Mrs. Wakelin.
Or is that Ms. Wakelin? I don't know. What is your preferred?
You know what? Just... Or don't be mean, and I'm fine with whatever you decide to say.
Hey, girl, how you doing?
Yo, biatch, I'd appreciate you not saying that. So the 23 Acura Integra is what I was driving this week, which was really cool because I didn't get to do the launch for this. And many, many, many years ago, my husband's first car that he ever bought with his very own monies when we were married was an Acura Integra. So he was kind of excited to see this one, too, because it's like, oh, it's back. First thing, the guy who drove one and loved one back in the day, he loves this thing. He thinks it's the coolest car ever. He's really pleased. So, you know, when you think about that, like, the heritage person, have they ruined the Integra? He said, you know, it's...
Do you have a manual or an automatic?
Manual, 6-speed
Ooh.
Manual.
Oh, yeah. See, that's all that matters. That's
it's
all
so
that matters.
Fun. You guys, this car is fun. I really like this one. So I was excited when they said I was going to get this. You know, for, like, because we had one, it's always neat to have a car that, like, you drove it back when it was a thing, and then they said, no, we're done with it. And then they bring it back, and you're like, okay, did you make it as cool a thing as you did last time? Yes. Yes, you did. So I had the A-spec with the technology package and the 6-speed manual that we mentioned. You can also get it with a CVT if for some reason your brain is broken and you think that's a better idea. You should be getting it with a 6-speed manual.
And if you don't know how to drive a manual, learn and then buy the Integra.
This is a car. This is one of those, here's your reason to learn this car. Learn how to drive one so that you can drive this. It's a fantastic manual transmission. It's so easy. It takes very little time to get the feel for the clutch. Nice short throw. It's just, it's fantastic. It's really fun to drive. It has a 1.5 liter turbocharged 4-cylinder, 200 horsepower, 192 pound-feet of torque. There's sport, comfort, normal, and individual modes. I pretty much put it in sport the whole time. You can feel a little difference as you move through the modes. It's not dramatic, but you can feel a little difference, and I liked it in sport mode. And also, it makes your instrument cluster turn red. So, like, why would you not want that, right?
That's always a good thing.
So car automatically goes faster.
Unless you're colorblind to red. You know, but
what color would it be? What would you see if you couldn't see red?
I don't know.
blue?
I don't, no. What color were green. What color
isn't green,
does it turn?
Isn't green and red
isn't
like
it
the
red?
Same?
I thought it was, is it green and red? So it looks green?
If you are colorblind, please send us a message.
Please
and
tell me what color your red dashboard looks like if you're colorblind. I'm curious, what does everyone
nothing?
See? Does it not change?
And how would we, how, yeah. Please send us your
questions.
We have a lot of colorblind
questions. If you're an ophthalmologist or you're colorblind, please let us know.
Please send us a tweet and tell us. So you can put into that sport mode, which is great. It exhilarating, it's fantastic. It's very strong. I mean, 200 horsepower is not like some crazy figure. It's somewhat modest. You know, it's not low, but it's not especially high. But because you have the manual transmission, you can play with that a little bit. You know, you have enough control. The only time that it is not what I would have liked it to be, and it was funny because my husband said, well, you know what, the original Tiger really kind of did the same thing. If you're on the highway and you're in sixth gear and you're flying along and you suddenly need a little bit more power to pass someone, you don't really have it. Like, you can bury that gas pedal and it will accelerate, but then it's like, I'm thinking of, then it's very modest. It's a very modest acceleration. You can drop back a gear to fifth. It gets a little bit better, but you just don't have that. Like, once you get all the way up there,
you don't have that torque.
You don't have the torque. It doesn't have the torque to deliver what you want to do. So if you suddenly want to go blazing by someone, you know, turn out of your lane, go around a slower guy in the highway. If you need to get extra power, it's not like it's terrible, but it's the thing is, it's so nice getting up to that speed, and it feels so strong getting up to that speed. You kind of expect it to still have that kind of aggressive acceleration at speed, and it doesn't. Once you're up there, it's like you sit here at the speed limit and, you know, don't plan on going faster on anyone because you can't do it. So,
well, but that's an excuse to use the gear shift.
It is, but even so, like, you shift down, it's like you can only shift. So, I mean, I'm not shifting down to second gear at 65 miles an hour. That would be bad for the car. So it's like, so you can shift down and get a little bit more, but it's sort of like, oh, I wish there was a little bit more there when you were at highway speeds and just wanted to, you know, give it a little bit more gas, go around a slower vehicle. But that wasn't enough to dim the fun of this car. I absolutely love driving this. It's super fun. Like I said, the transmission is wonderful. Has accelerating up to speed is just a joy, and it's so smooth, and it has just enough like grr coming out of the engine and the exhaust without being this harsh, abrasive thing. Like, if you just wanted to take this on a long road trip where you've got like a long morning commute, for anybody who still has to commute, you can do it, and it's comfortable. And it's got, you know, it's got the 60/40 split folding rear seats. It's a hatchback, so it still has that really good versatility for cargo. You know, you want to put something big in there, it is. What do my notes tell me? 24.3 cubic feet for cargo. So pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good amount of cargo room. It's not an SUV, but you get some of that SUV versatility with the hatchback because you can shove big, bulky things in there, whatever.
Mulch.
You could put some mulch.
You could put a few bags of mulch in there.
You could definitely put a
couple
bags. I
have done that in our Civic.
See? Yeah, you could if you don't have a truck, buy yourself an Acura Integra.
Same thing.
Totes the same. As far as inside, the standard setup is a 7-inch touchscreen with Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, and an 8-speaker audio. I had, because the A-Spec with Tech package, which is like considered a trim, is the top. It's got a 9-inch screen, wireless CarPlay and Android Auto, wireless charging, and a 16-speaker ELS premium audio system. So it's kind of tricked out. Sounds great. I mean, the audio system is great. There's also a 10.2-inch digital instrument cluster that's standard across the whole thing that we think is red unless you're colorblind. It's some other color when you're in sport mode. And there's a 5.3-inch head-up display that's an optional thing. You get it on this pad, but you don't get it on the base trims. The interior, you know, this is a really good-looking car. It looks good on the inside. You know, the Integra had this sort of history being this kind of like fun, sporty car, but not like top premium. You need to be, you know, Midas to afford it. It was a more reasonably priced car, which it still is, because the base is $30,800, which is not obscene. That's a decent price. Mm-hmm. But like I had on my trim, which I said, the top trim, $36,895. That's still pretty reasonable. It's not, it's keeping it under 40. That's something.
It is in 2022.
Right? And so you get a lot. There's micro suede seats, heated up front, 12-way power for the driver.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking about microwave seats now.
I know. Microwave seats. They warm up the butt.
They're great in winter temperatures.
four-way power passenger seat. You've got a leather-covered steering wheel. There's ambient lighting. And mine was all red inside, this bright, like, cherry red micro suede. It looks absolutely fantastic. It looks like a... It looks like a more expensive sports car when you open the door. I mean, you easily think this is going to cost more. And even the design from the outside, it's just a really attractive car. Even the like the Integra, it's really kind of cool. So you have to like look at it, find an image somewhere. But Integra isn't actually like stuck to it, like, you know, a little plate that's stuck to the car. It's like embossed into it. So it's like you stamped it into it and it says Integra. It's really kind of neat. So it's a nice package with interior and exterior styling, good performance, good technology. And gosh, thank you for putting a manual transmission in this Acura. I love you. I heart you. Thank you for doing that because it's so nice to have one and have one that's good. So I loved this. In fact, my husband had said, he said, if I was looking for like a car, like, cause he has, you know, he has a little Wrangler 4xe. So he has a little SUV-ish thing. He's like, if I was just looking for a sedan, this would totally be on my list because this is just such a nice, fun little car, and it's not outrageously expensive, but it looks and feels fantastic.
So, I mean, under the skin, this is basically a Civic Si.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And this costs about $3,000 more than a Civic Si. Is it worth $3,000 more?
The Civic Si feels compact. You know you're in a compact vehicle. It's kind of low. It's tighter. If you want a little bit more space, if you're going to put people in the back seat on anything more than like the odd occasion, yes, 100%. Because this, it doesn't seem like it's that much bigger, but it makes a difference. It is roomier. Like my husband's 6'3", right? So when he gets in the Civic, it's a little snug for him, you know, a little bit snug. Not too tight, but it's snug. Like he's packed, he's, you know, he fits and that's it. And there's like no room behind him for whoever's sitting behind him. Like you really can't sit behind somebody who's 6'3" when you're in a Civic. Here, you totally can because my daughter did. So he had the seat, the passenger seat adjusted where he wanted it to be comfortable up front. My daughter's 18. She sat behind him and her knees weren't mashed against the backs of the front seats. So it does give you a little bit more. It's a little bit more. You know what I mean? It's a little bit
more.
A little bit, just a little bit more. So I, yeah. Yes.
Okay. There.
Yes, Sam.
That Civic transmission is outstanding. So it's probably still outstanding here.
Still outstanding. Loved it. Loved it.
It's a nicer Civic Si.
It's a nicer Civic Si. You want a little bit more like
a little something something.
A little more civilized maybe. Not quite so much little thrashy little hatchback. Yeah. A little more civilized. Get yourself an Integra.
I mean, I'm just looking at the specs and it's actually only about an inch and a half longer. Mm-hmm. And it's got the same wheelbase as the Civic.
I don't know what's different, but there's definitely, maybe, I don't know if it's the positioning of the seats. Yeah, however they moved it, there is definitely not the same tightness behind those rear seats. Okay. I don't know if it's the angle of the seats.
Maybe.
I'll take your word for it.
It feels roomier. Hey, my child wasn't squished. I know my child was squished in the Civic Si, not squished in the Acura Integra. So there you go.
All right. Well, that's all that matters. Is you just don't want your kids to get squished.
You don't want your kids to be squished.
Yeah. You got a manual transmission and no squished kids, you're good to go.
Exactly.
Four doors. You know, I railed against the fact that it wasn't a coupe, but, you know, they would have had to get a whole other platform, blah, 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 in order to make it. And that's not a thing people can afford.
Yeah. Well, I like how they did this.
And I think, you know, the fact that it is a hatchback, you know, is actually a really good thing because
it does
make that rear end a lot more usable. Even if you've got the rear seats up, you can still it's easier to put larger stuff in the back of this than it is, if it was a sedan, you know, with a tiny little trunk opening.
Right.
So you can put bigger stuff in there. And then if you fold down the rear seats, you can put really big stuff in there. You got a ton of room back there.
Because it's not just the fact that there's like the actual cubic feet, although there's more. It's how those cubic feet are laid out. You know,
right.
Having that hatchback, you can put much bigger things into it than you can if you just have a standard trunk. Way bigger.
Okay.
Word.
Very good. All right. You didn't drive, well, you didn't have any regular thing that you drove this week, right, Robbie?
I drove my cars this week.
Okay.
I can tell you about the 2004 Jaguar X-Type.
Did that actually run?
Three liter sport. Yeah, it runs. Yeah, I drive it around. The dogs, we go for little drives with it.
Okay.
It needs new suspension, though. I need to replace the shocks and the springs and raise it up and put knobbies on it and then turn it into a safari car.
All right. I had something that was very much not a safari car, but is probably, I think, pretty similar in size to your X-Type, which is the Cadillac CT4V Blackwing, which is maybe a little bit too much name. But
it is a lot of name.
This is what the CT4V should have been when it launched a couple of years ago. I drove one, I think, in 2020. The regular CT4V before they debuted the Blackwing. And while I like the size of the CT4, you know, and for me, you know, I don't need a big honking sedan. You know, I like a smaller car, and I like the size of the CT4. But I was disappointed by the 2.7-liter turbo four-cylinder that they have in the V, which is the same engine that they debuted a couple of years ago as the base engine for the Silverado and Sierra pickup trucks. You know, it's fairly torquey, but it's not much fun to drive, really. Mm-hmm. The Blackwing goes back to what the previous ATS-V was. Before the pre-Blackwing days, the ATS-V had a 3.6-liter twin-turbo V6 engine. And that is the engine that they have brought back for this vehicle. And it is wonderful. Generates 472 horsepower and 445 foot-pounds of torque. And Cadillac offers... You can get this with either a 10-speed automatic transmission or a 6-speed manual.
Yay.
Unfortunately, the one that landed in my driveway had the 10-speed automatic.
Oh, man.
Wah, wah.
Bummer. But it's still a great engine. The automatic is, you know, as is often the case these days, is actually slightly quicker to accelerate than the manual just because it can do that stuff faster than almost any... You know, anything resembling a normal human being, not a race car driver, can achieve, and oftentimes faster than a race car driver can do. But with the Blackwing, you get the heavily bolstered seats. It comes with a bunch of carbon fiber bits, little dive planes on the front corners, a big spoiler that goes on the rear trunk lid, also a carbon fiber front splitter. All in the name of downforce, you know, basically trying to transform this into a track car. And I actually just saw this morning, today, as we're recording this, this is Sunday, June 26th, at Watkins Glen, where they're having the 6 hours of Watkins Glen IMSA race. Cadillac is going to be unveiling a special track edition of the CT4 Blackwing. I'm not quite sure yet what's going to be in that one, but that should be even more of what this is. But if you get the Blackwing with the manual transmission, they actually put titanium connecting rods in there instead of steel rods, presumably to let it rev even a little bit faster and also to protect them a little bit more in case you let it rev a little too fast. This is a fantastic car to drive. With the Blackwing, you get the Magna Ride dampers on all four corners, which if you've ever driven a vehicle with, especially a high-performance vehicle, with Magna Ride dampers, you will be those are actually optional. They're not standard. It comes standard with some ZF MVS passive dampers. But if you ever drive anything with Magna Ride dampers, you will be shocked at how good the ride quality can be, with you know the stiff springs and the limited wheel travel you can get. It's actually very reasonable to drive even on what passes for roads often in Michigan. It's got an electronic limited slip rear differential. Big Brembo brakes, six-piston calipers on the front, four-piston calipers on the rear, high-performance tires on 18-inch wheels, which is nice because, you know, that's less unsprung weight. And, you know, frankly, you know, a car this size, it doesn't need 20 or 22-inch wheels. It looks fine on 18s. So I had a lot of fun driving this thing. It is really quick off the line. It'll do 0 to 60 in well under 4 seconds. I didn't actually clock it, but you know, it feels fast. With the automatic, with the paddles, you know, it responds, surprisingly rapidly. It just goes, you know, it's very responsive. The steering feedback is great. You know, if you're looking for an alternative to something like a BMW M4 competition, Mercedes Mercedes AMG C63, this is a great alternative to cars like that. If you want something a little bit different that you're not going to see everywhere, the one that I drove, the base price on the CT4 Blackwing is about $65,000. Let me find the Monroney here. Yeah, it's about $58,000. Or $59,000 total as the base price. Optioned up with everything that I had on this one, which included the leather seats, the suede microfiber trim package, the carbon fiber package, which is $4,350, the 10-speed automatic, which is $2,275, and assorted other bits and pieces. It came to a
which
grand
you shouldn't
total.
Even get, by the way. Don't get the mm-hmm. automatic.
Yeah, don't get the automatic. Save your money. It came to a grand total of $76,560 delivered. it's, you know, if what you're looking for is a car that gets great fuel economy in these days of, you know, $5 to $7 to $8 a gallon gasoline, it's probably not your best choice. But, you know, if you're going to spend money on a high performance sedan, you know, forget about that. Just drive it. You'll enjoy it. Unfortunately, if you need to carry third and fourth passengers with you on a regular basis, unless they're short, you might want to opt for the CT5 Blackwing instead, because the back seat is pretty tight in this, especially foot room. There's not a lot of foot room, not a lot of leg room in this. But if it's mainly just you and your partner most of the time, go for it. This is a great car. I loved driving this thing.
I don't. Why did it even have the V on there if they have the Blackwing? Just call it the CT4.
I know. That's what I was calling it.
Yeah, the V. I feel like they need all
it's just a little bit too much.
It's too much.
Yeah.
Settle down.
Just drop the other CT4V and just call this the CT4V, which is probably what it should have been.
Yeah, that's another thing you could have done. Yeah.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
All right. Let's get into some of the other stuff that happened this week. Just before we started recording, Nicole told us her tales of woe of trying to get to Utah this week.
I was supposed to drive the Lyric, but then Delta's like, "No."
That's what you think.
Well, I mean, if you really wanted to, you could have gotten an hour or two in the Lyric.
I know. It would have.
It sounds like she would have got 45 minutes in the Lyric.
I would have gotten 45 minutes in the Lyric. I would have flown. I would have spent more time in an airplane than I would have actually in the Lyric. Yeah. So, unfortunately, when they bumped my flight by, 8 hours, I'm like, yeah, no, that's not going to work for a 24-hour turnaround program. I'm like, now I just kind of like land. Hi. Take my Diet Coke, leave out. That would have been it.
Yeah. Get your Diet Coke. I would like my free Diet Coke, please.
I like my free Diet Coke from you guys, and now I'm gone.
but Roberto and I did get to drive the new Cadillac Lyric.
What
did you think of it, Robbie?
Outstanding. I got into it. I have to shoot video for this. The video will be on Engadget if you want to see me walking around with hair that I should have cut before I did this. But, the first day you get the car, you can go get content, And so I drove the car, 30 minutes away. And even within the first 5-10 minutes, you're like, wow, this is really nice. And I don't want to say surprisingly nice, but I will. I don't care. Surprisingly nice. Because there are three Ultium vehicles that are on the road right now. And I've driven all three. One is the Hummer, which is just ridiculous. You have a lot of money and you just want to be the most ridiculous person on the planet. There you go. Get a Hummer.
That's the most accurate assessment. Yep, pretty much. That's it.
If you want to be ridiculous, get a Hummer.
Here's your ridiculous.
The second is the Bright Drop. I think it's called Vivo 600 now.
Zevo.
I've written the article about this and the fact that they changed the name has thrown me off. Which is, a really good delivery van, but, no one could buy it. Or no one should buy it unless you have a company that you need a delivery van. And
I don't know. It might make a pretty cool camper.
It with that range of over 250 miles loaded, which means the over unloaded, it would probably do it probably 320. I think is I was talking to somebody about it. so if you can swing that, go for it. But and then this is like the first regular person version of a Lyric. A regular person who can afford $60,000, but still a regular person version of a Lyric. And as a Cadillac, it's they did everything they needed to do to build a Cadillac EV SUV. I think the interior is nice. It drives really well. It has just the right amount of acceleration and sort of sportiness. Sort of sportiness is, I think, how you should. It's definitely not a. Yeah, it's not a black.
Well, at least in this first version, I would agree with that.
It is a very nice, very comfortable, very creepily quiet in some instances vehicle. I really liked it. Hats off to the engineers over there. They kept telling me over and over, we wanted to make the best Cadillac. I'm like, shouldn't that be every Cadillac you build? But sure. Okay. Shouldn't that be the goal for every time you're making a car?
The new best Cadillac. Well,
best version of each this. One should be better than the one before.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and Cadillac, I think, design-wise, Cadillac's really sort of been killing it for the last, 5-10 years so far. When I've shown up somewhere with a Cadillac sedan, people are like, what is that? Which is kind of sad because it's a Cadillac. They're like, oh, man, this looks great. I'm like, oh, it's not – maybe it's not working so well. But for those who have had a chance to drive, especially the sedans, and just kind of throw your friends in them, if you're looking for an EV version of that, that's not loud, that's very, very nice, very luxurious for what it is. The Lyric is, I'm looking forward to the Celestiq, however we're calling it.
Celestiq, or is Celestiq? It Celestiq?
Well, no, the Cadillac has said it's Celestiq.
Celestiq? Okay,
It should have been Celestiq.
It should have been Celestiq.
Well, I mean, we can call it whatever we want.
That's true.
I call it the Escalade, the Escalada.
Escalada. Delicious escalada.
Escalada. Hot sauce.
I really liked it. The current generation of EVs, everyone's coming out with really nice vehicles, is what it comes down to. Well, not everyone, but most people are coming out with really nice. You know, they're hitting that stride where it's not, you know, I think we talked about this before. It's not a good EV. It's a good car that happens to be an EV is what's happening.
Which is what you really want these to be increasingly. Like, it shouldn't be that they're that different. Like, there was a moment you're like, oh my gosh, this is an EV and it's cool. They're becoming, I mean, they're not mainstream. It's still a really small percentage of people who actually own one. But in terms of how they're addressing them, just start making them like seem like other cars. They just happen to have an electric powertrain, or, you know, get rid of the, oh, it's good for an EV. Oh, it looks good for an EV. It's designed for an EV. This isn't bad. Just make it look like another car.
Well, especially as we move past the era of, you know, having, you know, a lot of big price and tax incentives on buying EVs. You know, in the course of my work as an analyst, you know, this is something I was telling automakers several years ago, is, you know, you got to get to the point where these vehicles are, you know, they can sell themselves, you know, on their own merits, mm-hmm. regardless of, you know, what incentives there might be to buy one. You know, it just needs to be a really good vehicle right off the bat.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, this car, you know, is roughly the size of an Audi e-tron. The battery is only a little bit bigger than the e-tron, but it has 100 miles more range, which, you know, I think is really good. The battery pack in here is basically half of the battery pack from the Hummer, you know, which is, so this has got 12 of GM's Ultium modules in it. The Hummer battery is a 20, and it's a 12 module battery. The Hummer has 24 modules stacked in two layers. So they basically just sliced it horizontally. And, you know, for every Hummer they build, they can build two of these with the same batteries.
Just crazy to think
and the
of.
Weight, probably.
To Robbie's earlier description about
material.
It just being crazy. And
And you know, this has an EPA estimated range for the rear drive model anyway, which is all they're building right now, 312 miles versus I think it's 320 for the Hummer. You know, with twice as much battery because it weighs not quite twice as much, but quite a bit more than this. You know, the Hummer, you know, I think the launch edition Hummer is like almost 9,500 pounds. This one weighs about 5,600 pounds, which is actually heavy compared to, you know, some of the competition. It's about 300 or 400 pounds more than a Tesla Model Y, it's a little bit lighter than the e-tron. And I agree with you, Robbie. I think, you know, it's a fantastic vehicle to drive. What's interesting, you know, this was a rare case where they actually, rather than delaying a product launch to fix stuff, they actually pulled it ahead by 9 months from the original launch date. You know, this car wasn't supposed to start production until the end of this year. It was supposed to be starting production in China right about now, and then in North America at the end of the year, and go on sale early next year. And, you know, they're going to start delivering these either this week, you know, as we record this, you know, this coming week or next week is the plan to start deliveries. They've actually been building them, ready for production for about a month and a half now. I don't know how many they've built. And Cadillac isn't saying how, you know, what their production capacity is or how many they're going to build. There was a report from Reuters a couple of weeks ago that, and, you know, somebody from Cadillac pointed me to that and said that number is in the right ballpark. And, you know, Reuters reported that they were planning to build 25,000 this year and then ramp up next year.
25,000. That's a good clip from the middle of the year for a new vehicle that's an EV right now during crazy times.
Yeah. So, you know, the 2023 model year lyrics are all sold out. All the lyrics for this model year are the so-called debut edition. They're going to start production of the model year 24 late in quarter Q1 next year. So it's going to be a relatively short model year for 23. They actually this week opened up the order books for the model year 24 vehicles when they'll have some more trim levels available. And one of the things when we walked out to go for a drive for the on the first day, my driving partner and I, I drove with Chubba on the second day, Jeff Gilbert on the first day, said, would you like gray or gray? Because right now that is the only color you can get. And Jamie Brewer, the chief engineer, explained that part of the reason why it's only available in one color right now and only with the all-wheel drive version, the rear-wheel drive version, is because they had to pull everything ahead so much. One of the big challenges when you're building cars is actually color matching of components, different materials. So when you've got metal parts and plastic parts next to each other that are supposed to be the same color, actually getting them to look exactly the same is really, really hard. And you know, if you look at a lot of Teslas, you'll see just how hard that is. And so rather than try to rush things, they said, okay, we're going to focus on basically one configuration. I think about the only option that you have for these early ones is, do you want 20-inch wheels or 22-inch wheels? Everything else is standard on these, including the color. Over the course of the next 8 or 9 months, they will add some more colors. And in the fall, they will add the all-wheel drive version, the dual motor all-wheel drive. So what you get right now is a rear-wheel drive, 340 horsepower, and then the all-wheel drive one. And that motor, that electric motor that's on the rear axle, is basically the same one that they use in the Hummer, although the Hummer has three of them, two on the rear and one on the front. So there's only one in here right now. And then for the all-wheel drive version, they'll add 160 horsepower motor on the front axle to give you 500 horsepower and all-wheel drive. And when I asked about, you know, well, are we going to see something like, say, a Lyric Blackwing with, you know, three 340 horsepower motors? Jamie just smiled and said, you never know.
We cannot comment on future projects.
Yeah.
But we can smile broadly and smile. Wink.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
So the only real problem that we encountered with the Lyric was some of the software for the infotainment system. And yeah, these were very early pre-production cars that they had there. They did not have the latest build of software in them. And so there were some glitches in here. You know, according to Cadillac, they've got a couple of OTA software updates that they're going to be deploying to the cars that are built before they get delivered to customers in the next couple of weeks, that should fix most, if not all, of these problems. So like we had things like, and the one that I was driving, when you put it in reverse, the backup camera wouldn't come on. Sometimes it would come on after about 10 seconds. Other times it wouldn't come on at all until I put it back in drive, and then the backup camera would come on.
Oh, as you're driving away, it's showing you where you just went. Yes, that's exactly. Super helpful.
Yeah.
Those are always kind of cool because it throws you off. It still has the backup camera while you're driving forward. Like,
sometimes
whoa.
They do that. Like, and it's not even like there's something broken. Just some cars hold on to that longer. I hate that. I'm like, I don't need. It's freaking me out, man. What am
it's
I looking at? I'm going forward. It's very disorienting to see that on
it's
your.
It's also like, oh, is someone following me? You know, if you're a spy.
Who's following me?
But yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, a couple other minor software glitches. I mean, I agree. The rest of it was great. It's really, really quiet when you drive it, you know, you can select, you know, between one pedal driving mode or, you know, basically coasting mode, and then the paddle on the left hand side of the steering wheel lets you do regen on demand, which they've had on the Bolt for a couple of years. But they've changed it on this one. So instead of it being, you know, a couple of different steps of regen that you can select by tapping the paddle, now it's pressure sensitive. So you can control with your finger, you know, you lift off the accelerator, you can control with your finger how much additional regen you want to get from the paddle without touching the brake pedal. So just modulating that paddle, you can control the amount of braking you get, which, you know, once you've get used to it and figure out, you know, how much is there. I thought worked really well. And the rear seat in this thing is really incredibly roomy. What did you think, Robbie, about the fact that there's no frunk in this thing?
Unless the frunk is really big, unless it can fit a like a carry-on, I don't care.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. Unless it's like, don't give me like a frunk where like, hey, look, you can put like an iPad in here. I'm like,
and some of the frunks are like, it's like, that is this, like, that's, is the glove box bigger than this? Like, and I feel like they're just, you're right. It's kind of like they're just doing like, well, it to say they're doing it. And it's kind of like, you know, if you can do it and it's actually going to be a useful spot, have at it. If you can do it and it's not going to hold anything more than your wallet, maybe don't.
Or maybe your charging cord.
Yeah. Unless it's cord. Like, you know, like the Lightning or you know, yeah. something huge or the Mach-E. I don't care. Because if it's like a small one, I won't even talk about it on video.
Really? You just ignore it. You're like, whatever.
I'm like, look at it. I'm like, well, this isn't even worth talking about. I mean, I guess if you're going to hide one thing and they're like, oh, it's, you know, a couple of people told me it's more secure. I'm like, people just break into your car and they can pop the hood. That's not a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
No, not more secure, but okay, that makes you feel
breaking
better.
In the car is just like busting the driver's side window and opening the trunk. You can do the same thing with the frunk. It's
Yeah, and unless you have a power operated hood like you have on the Rivian or the F-150, yeah, it's not particularly convenient. You know,
it's all heavy.
Yeah, if you've got stuff, you know, that you're carrying, like, you know, if you come out of the grocery store or whatever, and you have to open the driver's side door, reach down, pop the hood in order to put something in the frunk. I mean, what's the point of that? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there actually is some not insignificant volume under the hood. I mean, we opened the hood and popped the plastic cover off to see how much was there. There's actually a fair amount of space above the charger, the onboard charger.
Do you think it should have been frunk worthy, or is it enough that it makes sense that they didn't do a frunk?
I'll put it this way. If they had wanted to do a frunk, they could have.
Okay.
You know, and had, it might not have been enough for a carry-on bag, but, you know, certainly enough for, you know, a couple of backpacks, you know,
sure.
and a couple, you know, bag or two of groceries, something like that. But again, unless they had put a power hood on there too, so you could open it externally, it wouldn't be particularly useful.
Right.
Especially as a Cadillac, because it's supposed to be a luxury car. So now you're adding all this weight and all this extra complexity for like a kind of small frunk.
And, you know, talking to one person off the record, they said, you know, part of what they were doing is package protecting for some future stuff that they want to do, which, you know, may well include a larger front motor than the one that's going to be going on there in the fall. You never
soft
know.
Serve machine.
Could be, yeah, you know,
soft
or
serve machine,
you know,
coffee machine, coffee.
Maybe a, you know, a 340 horsepower
I'm going
front
with a
motor,
a nice little espresso machine up there.
Yeah,
a little espresso machine. There's a lot you can put up there.
Yeah, so you know, they're definitely looking at that stuff. What else? One other annoyance I did find before we got the presentation on the first day, and then went for our first drives. We were sitting in the car. In the hub, the presentation area, looking around the interior, and trying to figure out how to open the glove box.
Challenging. Was it weird?
Too many things in the entertainment system.
Three taps on the touchscreen
to open your glove. Wait, you can't.
Yes.
What? Really?
There's no button for the glove box.
There's no button.
Oh.
There is like a little cubby like underneath the infotainment system that's about the size of a glove box, so you can put things in it.
The glove box is actually pretty big. It's got quite a bit of space in there.
If you take the time to open it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's three taps, you know, to go down, drill down through a couple steps of the menu.
What was the logic behind that? Did anyone address why they decided that needed to be in the infotainment screen?
Clever for the sake of clever.
Yeah. You know, too much software-defined vehicle. Sometimes there's some things that shouldn't be controlled by software. They should just put a button on there and be done with it.
And you guys, that's from an engineer. So designers, take note. That was an engineer who just said sometimes things don't need to be controlled with software. It just needs a button, like old school people.
But they do have physical switches for the climate control stuff, which is good. That was good.
But no drive mode buttons. So you have to go into the infotainment system.
Yes, that's
just two taps to get to hit the tap, and then
it takes fewer taps to change the drive mode than it does to open the glove box.
Which you'll do more often anyway. I mean, I open the glove box on our cars to put the new registration.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, if you get pulled over.
Hold on.
Tap, 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 as you're panicking.
Excuse me, officer. I know it's in this menu somewhere.
Give me just a second.
Box.
I swear I'll get you my license and registration.
Yeah,
give me a minute.
If you do it once a year, you're like, oh man, where's the glove box? You're like, hold on, I got to open up the owner's manual.
Oh my God.
Scrolling through. Maybe you won't get a ticket because the cop's just like, you know what? Forget it.
Worth the hassle.
It's not worth the hassle.
Yeah. So there's
that's
that.
Funny.
But we did have a couple of questions that were related to the lyric. One was from Surtur. How long does the caddy take to get full and 80% full using the fastest charger available? Could it be used as a road trip car with a distance of, say, 600 miles in a day?
600 miles is a long way.
Yeah. So, you know, they didn't specifically say, you know, how long it and they don't specifically say how long it takes to get to full. You know, and obviously it depends on, you know, what your starting point is. But the Lyric does support 190 kilowatt DC fast charging, which is faster than most. And what they do say is it'll do up to 76, it'll add up to 76 miles of range in about 10 minutes of charge time. So that's pretty good. You know, what we can estimate, you know, the 100 kilowatt hour battery pack, you got 190 kilowatt charging. To do basically a full charge is probably going to take you somewhere between 40 and 45 minutes. You know, you can probably get to 80% in under 30 minutes with this thing. So that's pretty reasonable, I think. So,
and if you're doing 600 miles in a day, unless you're someone who drives 600 miles on the regular, you're going to pull over about every 200 miles or so.
Yeah.
And you're going to want to sit down and stretch, and you throw that thing on there for 30 minutes, and you'll be get it ready to go again.
So, yes, you can do a 600-mile road trip in a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 312 miles, you know, I mean, that's comparable to what you're getting from a Tesla. The only question is, you know, is it actually going to, you know, is the charging going to be as reliable as what you get from superchargers? Mm. And that's, you know, that's still a very open question. I actually talked with some folks from GM's infrastructure group a couple of days ago about an announcement they were making. They're actually adding plug and charge capability to all of their EVs, as opposed to plug and charge, you know, like with an ampersand, which is plug and charge is the standard that Ford and Volkswagen and Porsche and a few other manufacturers have started to implement, and Electrify America supports that. In theory, at least, means that, you know, you set up your payment information in your car or your automaker account one time. You pull up to a plug and charge compatible charger, plug it in, and it just, you know, it talks to the car, figures out, you know, who to bill, and just starts charging. And you don't have to do anything else. You don't have to do any accounts or tapping an RFID card or anything else. It just charges. And GM is adding this to their EVs. It's a slightly different version of the same concept. They're doing it with EVgo first, and they'll be adding other charge network operators over the course of the next year or so. But EVgo is their main partner, and theirs is plug and, spelled out AND, charge. But it's supposed to do basically the same thing. We'll see if it actually works any better than plug and charge. That's, you know, that should help, hopefully, as long as the chargers themselves are actually functional. If the chargers, if EVgo and Electrify America and ChargePoint and all the others don't actually keep their chargers working, then all of this is
none of it matters.
Yeah.
They're doing better. Yeah. I will say, you know,
they are.
Anecdotal aid, but, you know, it's early days still. But can we just, can we just pick a good, like, setting? Plug in charge, plug and charge. Just pick one, and everyone do it, because it's already an extremely complex system. So, like, okay, now this car has to talk to this charger, and the softwares have to be, you know, besties. And
it really,
we've created another thing. I'm like,
you're totally right. Because it's hard enough for people to make the idea, like, well, now I have to think about where I'm going to go and where I'm going to charge, and I have to plug in, and I have to plan for this time, and I can only do this many miles, and it's not like there's a gas station in every corner and it takes me 10 minutes to fill my tank. I could have to spend there for half an hour. It's already enough of a, like, mental obstacle for people to overcome making the switch. Now it's like, oh, no, it's not just any gas station. Imagine. There's 15 different kinds of pumps that you might want to use. And you have to see if what you have on your phone lets you use that pump. And if it doesn't, they make it like they're sort of shooting themselves in the foot with this. Come with one. Make it work. That would be so nice. That'd be so nice.
Pick a thing, people.
Pick a thing.
Pick a thing.
Pick a thing. One thing. Pick one. Don't be greedy. One thing.
Yep. Another question we had about the lyric from John Halkias. How does the lyric compare? The lyric luxury compare to the other luxury brands, iPace, iX, e-tron, etc., insofar as interior and ride quality? What do you think, Robbie?
It's very, very nice. I really like the interior, except for one thing that someone else actually pointed out to me, and that is the little plastic that's along the center console. If you tap it, it doesn't feel good. It makes like a weird little tap, 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 tap. So actually, and it's
you just turned it into a snare drum.
I did turn it into a snare drum. That's
not one of those things that once heard can never be unheard.
Yes. Yeah, so hopefully, I mean, we were driving pre-production or early production or whatever they want to call it. You know, they're not the ones that are going to be sold to regular folks. These things will probably be smashed later on, or maybe fixed. Who knows? Outside of that one thing where I literally I couldn't stop tapping it once I started tapping on it. It's actually really, really nice. It drives really nice. I think the Audi is has a bit more sporty because it is an Audi. That's their brand. And the iPace is, you know, I want to give a lot of props out to Jaguar. Jaguar, of all people to come out, they came out with an EV really early compared to everyone else. And I think the iPace is a good car, but I think it's also very long in the tooth at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Challenge. If you were early in on any of it, the changes are happening so fast that it's something that would have made it for 5 or 6 or 7 years and looked okay before. Suddenly it looks horribly dated really fast because it's changing so quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's the punishment, which is unfair almost because they were early out of the gate. And it's like, now you're punished because your car looks old. You know?
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. They're sort of, I mean, that's why I think, you know, the federal tax credit should be extended to Tesla and GM because they're being punished right now for doing a good job early on. And soon Toyota will be also punished for that. You know, you did a good job early on. Now you don't get any nice things. Now your dealers have to explain why they can go over to the Audi dealership and still get a discount, but they can't get it here. Or a tax break, not a discount.
All right, let's stick with EVs for just a couple more minutes before we get into something else that Nicole drove, which is the Polestar 5 prototype, which this weekend was being shown off at the Goodwood Festival of Speed in the UK. What do you think of the Polestar 5?
It looks fantastic. I really like the way it looks. I got invited to Goodwood and I had to say no because
The
lyric, and then I have a lot of stuff going on in my life that I'm like, I can't go on every trip. And now like looking, and there's a lot of stuff that's going on at Goodwood. It's like, oh, sad face, Robbie, but
sad face, Robbie,
this Polestar 5 looks so good. Oh man. It's, I know people, and there's probably a lot of people who bought a Polestar 2. I'm like, oh, I should have waited.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is still a couple of years away. You know, if they leased one, you know, in the last year, you know, by the time this comes out, you know, they'll be just about done with the lease on their Polestar 2, and they can upgrade to the 5.
That's the dream.
Yeah,
that's the dream. Upgrade.
Upgrade.
Yeah, this is, you know, like unlike the Polestar 2, which has a very Volvo vibe to it. You know, with, I think starting with the 3 coming later this year. And then the 4 and the 5, you know, there's Polestar is starting to move in their own design direction. Yeah, and this thing, you know, it's a fastback sedan. I'm not sure if it's a hatchback or not, but it's certainly a fastback. You know, very much in the vein of, you know, an e-tron GT, but it still retains the Thor's hammer lights, which I thought is interesting.
How can you get rid of that Thor's hammer lights? That's the coolest name. Like, everybody can come up with whatever they want to call their fancy lights. None of you are going to beat the fact that they call them Thor's hammer. Really? That's cool. And this looks great. The car does look really good in these early images. It looks pretty fancy pants.
884 like horsepower, so you can't complain about that.
That should be an acceptable amount of horsepower, I guess.
I think, in the old days, you know, Rolls-Royce never used to say how much power their vehicles had. It was just simply, it was always just listed as adequate.
No way. Was it? I never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, until wow. about 20 years ago when BMW took over Rolls-Royce, Rolls-Royce never listed the power output for any of their engines.
No kidding. What, because they figured, like, no, if you need to add, this is...
You're buying a Rolls-Royce also.
Yeah.
You're like, ooh, it's got 1,200. No one cares because you have a Rolls-Royce and it's adequate.
Yeah. Right, you're never going to be like...
Which is the most British thing ever. It's adequate.
But I feel like also if you bought a Rolls, I almost feel like, I want to custom this. I want more. Somehow Rolls-Royce would be like, okay, we can work on that for you. How much money you got?
Yeah.
Just give us your PIN number. Right. I guess PIN number is a PIN number. That's like saying ATM machine. Just give us your PIN.
Yeah.
Oh, I never
Or you know, your routing transfer number, yeah, you know, for your account. Or just put us on just your the account number for your Swiss bank account.
Just
yeah.
put us on
for your
account.
Swiss bank account. Yeah. Because you probably have one if you're buying a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. Seems reasonable to me.
What are we gonna, how much money are we going to spend sending your kids to school, to college? All right, double that and send it to us.
Yeah. So, yeah, 884 horsepower. It's getting an 800-volt electrical architecture, which means it should be able to charge really fast. I think this looks like it's going to be a lovely car. And then, you know, this fall or late this year, early next year, we get the Polestar 3, which is going to be unveiled in October. I don't think it'll actually be on sale till early in the new year. And then next year, the Polestar 4, which is a smaller crossover, a smaller electric performance SUV coupe, they call it. Looks like Polestar, you know, and they just listed on the NASDAQ stock exchange this week. Looks like they're well on their way.
Yeah, they have a Polestar dealer. Well, it's like a showroom. It's like a room with some cars. Anyway, they have they have some here in the Bay Area, and I see a lot of Polestars in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So for the markets that they want to sell in, they seem to be doing pretty well. Again, the Bay Area is not the rest of the world.
That's true.
It's not.
It is very much not the rest of the world.
Yeah, we live in a fantasy fun land. Like, hey, yeah. You want an EV? There's 50 of them right over there. There's two chargers. Like, there's two chargers within 5 minutes of me, on either side of me. Two EA chargers. There's another charger down the street. Yeah, again, the Bay Area is a crazy land.
Okay. Nicole, back to Honda.
Yes.
Honda.
You've driven the HRV.
I have driven the HRV. Yes.
The HRV.
The Honda HRV. I'm going to call it the Honda HRV. Yeah.
So how was the HRV?
The HRV, I actually really liked it.
We complained about the way it looked last week, or I think at least I did. I don't know if you
I don't know if I complained about the way it looked. I don't know.
I know I did. But,
you did? Maybe I complained and I changed my mind. I don't know. I think no. So they have a new HRV that I don't think I have a problem with how it looks. I didn't think it was particularly... meh or anything. I was pleased with it. It was fun to drive. I mean, I am not a fan of the old HRV. I hated it. I didn't like it. Yeah. It was just.
Don't hold back. Tell us what you really thought.
It was, but it was like, you guys, it was so, the engine was so underpowered and it was so whiny and it was so loud. And if you had to, I had to take that thing on a drive up like into Vermont and from here, and it was a couple hours in the car. I couldn't wait to get out of that car. That doesn't often happen. The old one, the new one, I thoroughly enjoyed. It was an entirely different vehicle to drive. It feels much better. It looks better. I feel like the interior quality no longer has that sort of plasticky kind of cheesiness. I mean, it used to feel like a cheap crossover. I know they sold a ton of them. It was like, it sold really well. From what I understand, last time I looked at numbers, it sold really well. But I just felt like there were a lot of other things too in the segment that did it better. Now, not so much. I think that they made it a little bit wider. They made it a little bit longer. They made, you know, they've changed some of the materials that are inside. It has a good amount of room for cargo. They updated infotainment. I mean, there's nothing they didn't really touch in this. Everything got a little bit of attention. So everything is better, including the engine. There's a new 2-liter four-cylinder, 158 horsepower, 138 pound-feet of torque. It's, again, 158, not a huge number. But sometimes it doesn't have to be a huge number to do the job. This is fine for this vehicle. It accelerates strongly, although it's not aggressive. But now it gets up to highway speeds and doesn't feel like you might not actually make it to 55. It feels like it's going to make it now. And it also, it's like, it's not going to make it. We're going to have to find a side road. And now it feels like there's still a CVT, but they've updated it. So with the new engine and the new CVT, the combination is better than it used to be. So it's not that one is outstanding. It's that both of them together take a little step forward, and that makes a big step forward for the vehicle overall. We took it where we were in Oregon driving this, and it was, we had this like very, they give us this one stretch with these really twisty, turny roads that we got to drive on. Really twist, turn, twist, turn, twist, turn. And that's the kind of thing, if you have a car that doesn't handle well, it's going to show itself right off the bat because you feel like you're always going too wide in every turn. It doesn't. It handles well. Not a sports car, but it handles nicely. And it was quiet. It has an affordable starting price. It only starts at $24,895 for the base trim. That's not bad. You're getting yourself a little compact crossover that's, you know, got the, and also, you know, it's a Honda, so it's going to hold up. You're not going to have to worry about the wheels falling off tomorrow. You know, it holds up well. It's durable. It's sturdy.
Well, you might, you never know, because, you know, there's another company whose wheels are falling off, and, you know, they're not somebody you'd usually associate with that.
Sometimes it happens. I feel relatively certain that that the wheels are not going to fall off. I have a high degree of confidence. So, I think that they've, you know, there's still other vehicles. There's a lot of competition here. Like the compact crossover, there's a lot of options to choose from. So I think they needed to take the HR-V and make it better, like all around make it better, not just focus on one thing. And that's what they did. They made all the little pieces, the trims, the interior materials, the engine, the infotainment. Everything is one step better. And by making all those things one step better, they overall create a much better vehicle.
Yeah, well, does it still have the magic seat?
Does not have the magic seat.
Oh, bummer.
I know.
Because, you know, this time, the first generation HR-V was based on the Fit platform, right. Mm-hmm. Which is also what the new HR-V in the rest of the world is based on the Fit platform.
Yes.
Because Americans want everything bigger, right. You know, we got an HR-V that's based on the Civic. So I think everything you say about the way it drives, the way it handles, seems consistent with, right. You know, it's basically a Civic.
It's a Civic.
Yeah, you know, it's a taller Civic.
I'm basically driving all the variants of the Civic. Every version of Civic that doesn't say Civic is what I've been driving lately.
All the time.
That's my thing. Well, we did Hyundai. What else did we do? We did another brand. Now we're on to the Civics.
Yeah. So, you know, you would expect it to have similar kind of driving dynamics to the Civic. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it does.
It does.
And unfortunately, you lose the magic seat. But,
You lose the magic seat, but overall, I mean, even with losing that, I figure the gains, I feel like the gains in all the other places make this something that I still would recommend. I like it. I don't like losing the magic seat, but the other stuff is better, so I still like this better.
Okay, fair enough. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. There was one more listener question from AJ asking, is Honda sticking with CVT transmissions forever?
Yep.
Yeah, probably with the odd manual thrown in there for fun.
Yeah.
Well,
at least until they switch everything over to electric, in which case they'll just ditch both manuals and automatics.
Yeah. But you know, point of fact, like I said, they redid the CVT in this one; they made it better. So yeah, they're sticking with CVTs, but I think they're still working to make them
better,
more refined, not as annoying. Yeah, so yeah, still a CVT, but not as bad a CVT. They keep getting better.
Okay. Let's see. What else? One last item for this week. Actually, second to last item. Ford this past week invited myself and Elisa Priddle from Motor Trend and Jordan Grzelewski from the Detroit News to visit their new dynamic driving simulator. This is a full motion simulator that they've had one similar to this. Actually, they've had a couple of these for a number of years already. They have one elsewhere on their product development center campus in Dearborn that is called Vertex. I think it goes back to the mid 2000s when they built that one. That one doesn't have quite as much fidelity, as much, you know, it's not as powerful in terms of how fast and how it can move the vehicle around for simulation, and they use that one mostly for doing human factors testing, you know, human machine interface testing. You know, so it's got a little bit of motion to it, fair bit of motion, but not what this does. This is more similar to the one that they built at their Ford Performance Development Center in North Carolina back in 2014 for racing, and they use that one for for testing the original the Ford GT for a lot of their race cars, and then subsequently they used it for development work on the Lightning and the Mach-E. As well as some other stuff, but now they have a new one in Dearborn, so they have more access to it for their production programs. The other one was really built more for racing programs, and so this thing, you know, it's on these big hydraulic actuators. It's got 9 degrees of freedom for moving around, and we got to actually get in and drive it, and you know, simulate driving Ford Maverick on some different roads, and also a Lightning on some different road surfaces, and also experience what it's like doing some driver assist system testing with it. So, you know, this thing is surrounded by a 270-degree screen. You get in, you buckle in, and then in the control room they turn it on, and, you know, it feels very realistic, especially the motions you feel. You know, some of the different road surfaces, you know, it really feels like you're driving on these different road surfaces. It was really impressive. You know, this is something they're going to be using for all their programs going forward, because what they can do is they can model all the different dampers, the different springs and tires and everything else, and the suspension architecture of different vehicles, and try out a lot of different stuff in the simulator before they have to build prototype parts. You know, and they can, in the sim, they can change damper settings, you know, instantly, instead of having to go out to a track, you know, with, you know, 5 different sets of dampers, and, you know, go out, run a bunch of laps, and then come back into the garage, swap out the dampers, go out and run some more laps, and gather all the data. They can do it in just a matter of hours in this simulator. It was really fun to drive. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You know what it looks like though? It's funny looking at the images. All I can think of, you ever seen those things when you're at like an amusement park or whatever, they have, you can create your own roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. And then they have the little vehicle that you sit in, and it creates the nausea inducing roller coaster ride that you invented. It looks just like that.
Yeah. Except this can move a lot faster, with a lot more fidelity, and, you know, replicate real stuff.
I would hope.
Yeah. What was really fun was when I was driving the Maverick, I found out the hard way that turns out that the model they had of the Maverick did not have the ABS set up in there yet. And so I'm driving down this highway, and I slammed on the brakes. I wanted to see what would happen, you know, when I slammed on the brakes, and all of a sudden the back end of the thing is sliding around on me. And it felt like I was sliding in a car, which was pretty cool, without actually having to risk, you know, slamming into the guardrails or any other vehicles around me.
Sweet.
So that was fun. The last thing we've got, which I'll be dropping in here, is an interview that I did with Jamie Brewer. Jamie is the executive chief engineer for the Cadillac Lyriq, and we talked for about 15 minutes about some of the but the development of this vehicle and some of the challenges they faced, especially with trying to accelerate the program and bring it forward. So I'll drop that in here. Jamie Brewer, Executive Chief Engineer on the Cadillac Lyriq. Let's start off with a quick little bit of background on you. How long have you been with GM?
I've been with GM about 23 years now. Been sort of all over the company, lots of different engineering roles. Started off doing performance work out of our proving grounds, noise and vibration, mostly. And then moved into a lot of different release type activities. I've been in chassis, body, interiors, spent some time in the quality organization, and ultimately moved into
good practice for Cadillac.
Yeah. And then moved into these roles, yeah.
So when did you get involved with the Lyriq program? And I guess when did the Lyriq program kick off, and were you involved right from the beginning?
Yeah, I got involved with the Lyriq program about 4 years ago, right about 4 years ago. And I would say it had just sort of exited the architectural phase of our development cycle, and we were starting to work on what we would call the top hat. So Prior to that, it had been in where we call our Advanced Vehicle Development Group, really working on the skateboard, figuring out how the Ultium battery pack was going to integrate with the chassis and the body structure, doing all of that sort of blank paper upfront work. And then once we got to the point where the skateboard was pretty set, and now we were starting to talk about things like ball of foot to front axle, front overhang, top hat, all of that, that's when I joined the team and started working on it from the top half of the architecture perspective.
So what, as you were developing the architecture, what was the goal? What was your theme around this vehicle, and why choose this particular form factor?
Yeah. The theme was that it was going to be the best Cadillac SUV we've ever done, period. Irrespective of the propulsion technology. So we knew it was an EV vehicle, and that's great. But first and foremost, from my perspective, was this was going to be the best Cadillac we've ever done. And we were not going to compensate. Just because it was an electric vehicle does not mean we're compensating on the fact that it's a Cadillac. And so that was really, in all of the sort of conversations and debates as you go through vehicle development, that was sort of the North Star for me. And we always went back to, okay, what is the right decision for this to be the best Cadillac SUV we've ever done? That's where we're going to go with it. And that's been our North Star all along. And I think I'm very proud with the results. And I do think this is one of the best Cadillacs we've ever put out.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly, visually, and for this, because I want to put this out before next week, I'm not going to talk about the driving impressions, but, from an aesthetic perspective, both inside and out, I think, the team's done a phenomenal job. I'm going to ask you a question that we've already talked about, but I want to get it recorded, because this is a question that pops up all the time from people that are interested in EVs. As far as the architecture, it has in many ways, a traditional SUV form factor.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a longer hood.
Yep.
But there's no front storage. There's no frunk.
Yep.
Give me that explanation again.
Yeah, that's fair. So, and I'll tell you that the conversation around a frunk was had multiple times in many different forums. This debut edition rear-wheel drive vehicle, and actually in all of our vehicles, we offer the ability for the 19.2 kilowatt at-home charger. That is a significant upgrade. It's actually the fastest charger, home charger in the industry today. It'll give you about 52 miles in an hour of charge. So you need a 100-amp circuit, but it is a great option for people that really want fast at-home charging. However, that does drive the need for a second onboard charge module to handle that type of conversion from AC to DC power, right? Once we package that second onboard charge module, the amount of space left for a frunk, because we do obviously have other underhood elements, there was availability for a frunk, but it would have been on the smaller side. What we decided to do, and again, this goes back to sort of the North Star that I talked about, the best Cadillac irrespective of the propulsion system. The options were a small frunk in a medium-sized cargo area, or, since we'd already sort of compromised the front with that second onboard charging unit, take some more of the electrical modules that we package in the rear compartment. In a typical vehicle, any typical vehicle, you pull back your rear compartment trim, you're going to see a bunch of electrical modules bolted to the sidewall. And you lose inches of space on each side that could be used as cargo space. What we chose to do is take a bunch of those modules, move them under hood as well, fill up the under hood area, shrink wrap the rear cargo area, and now we've given you the largest possible rear cargo area. So you could either have a small frunk and a medium-sized cargo area, or no frunk and a large cargo area. If we're thinking about the customer, the opportunity for choice and to bring more items along with you on your trip lends itself to saying the large cargo area is the right decision. It's not trendy from an EV perspective.
Sure.
And I was okay with that.
GM is doing frunks in other vehicles, like the Silverado and the Hummer.
It's a vehicle by vehicle. What's the customer base and what's the purpose of that vehicle?
Uh-huh.
And in this case, the purpose of the vehicle was to give the customer the best possible experience possible. And we felt that giving them the maximum cargo volume in the rear was the right decision.
So in the course of developing this vehicle over the last several years, what were the biggest challenges that you had to overcome?
you know, I guess one of the biggest ones, and it's funny that people don't usually think about it, but was noise and vibration in this vehicle. If you think about a traditional ICE vehicle, we tend to forget the value of an internal combustion engine as it relates to masking other unwanted noises, right?
Because it tends to dominate.
It dominates,
sound,
yeah. And it balances out frequencies that would typically be considered obtrusive to the driver, but that they're not going to hear because of the dominance of the combustion engine, right?
Yeah.
You get rid of that internal combustion engine, now you put a drive unit in. A drive unit is typically going to have a higher frequency sound to it than a combustion engine, first of all, but it's at a much lower decibel level, and now all of those annoying sounds start to become prominent. Even road noise, wind noise, but all of the customer actuated, all of the modules, all of the pumps, all of the actuation sounds, all the switching frequencies, you start hearing all of those, right? So how do we now handle that? Because again, we still want to create that quiet oasis environment. If you actually were to tear down a Lyriq, you'll notice we actually have more noise abatement content in the Lyriq than we have in its predecessor, the ICE vehicle, the XT5. That was because we are cognizant of the fact that we need to block more noises, we need to absorb more noises because we can't mask them,
uh-huh.
Right? And then we go into things like our EV sound enhancement and our active noise cancellation, our advanced active noise cancellation, again, to get after those unwanted noises. So you'll notice when you're driving the vehicle, it very much is a quiet oasis, but that was not... that was on purpose. There was quite a bit of effort that went into creating that environment.
And this is a very quiet vehicle. You know, wind noise was really well subdued.
Thank you.
So that, you know, that clearly is, you know, an important thing when you make that transition to EVs. Another area, that something you lose with an internal combustion engine is a source of waste heat. And,
yeah.
You know, living in Michigan, you know, winter weather, you know, we rely on that waste heat to keep cabin comfort in the wintertime. And with an EV, traditionally you've had to use energy from the battery, so you lose range. Can you talk about the heat pump system a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, so we do have a heat pump system which actually takes advantage of, to your point, waste heat. I mean, yes, engines create waste heat, but battery packs create waste heat as well. And if you look at the top of the battery pack, there's basically a heat sink that we're able to pull heat off of and turn into cabin heating. So it's actually helped quite a bit from our range as we look at doing our range certification. The way that we are able to capture that waste heat and turn it into cabin comfort, that doesn't mean we never have to pull heat from the battery pack. I mean, all EVs, to your point, dependent on the ambient temperature outside, to some extent we'll have to. But the heat pump system, and it's a brand new system in the Lyriq, and we're continuing to evolve it on our future EVs, is able to get us a benefit from reducing our dependency and pulling energy out of our high voltage system and turning it into cabin cooling.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that whole, you know, anything you can do to improve the overall efficiency of the system, you know, whether it's power electronics or the climate control, is going to be important for EVs because,
yeah.
You know, the batteries are, you know, despite the advances, they're still very big and heavy,
yes.
And cost a lot of money. So what, you know, What would you say you're the most proud of with this car?
I'm so proud of this car. I'll tell you that, you know, after you spent 4 years of your life working on something, it's hard to boil it down to just one thing. I will say one of the things that I do like to talk about a lot is, the driving dynamics and the steering and handling performance of the vehicle, I just absolutely love. I think we made the absolute right decision with the hard-mounted front cradle. We had a lot of back-and-forth conversation on that. But the steering precision you get out of this vehicle, the maneuverability, the road-hugging experience, I think it was absolutely the right decision. So I am extremely proud of our driving dynamics. I personally like to drive the vehicle in sport mode. So hopefully your readers or listeners will get a chance to do that, because that gives you even that much more control over the vehicle. But I would say besides the driving dynamics, I am extremely proud of how closely this vehicle is linked to the show car. If you look at the show car that was revealed a couple of years ago, and if you kind of go back over time and look at various show cars released by a multitude of companies, I'm not going to say just GM, and then you sort of take a look at the production variant of that vehicle you're hard pressed to really say they're the same vehicle, uh-huh. right? If you look at the Lyric Show car and you look at the Lyric production vehicle, you would be hard pressed to name 10 things that were different.
You can find little details if you look really hard, but yeah, right. It is very close to the original.
And the reason it's not done very often is because it's hard.
Uh-huh.
It's really hard. You have to take this beautiful, wonderful vision of your creative designers, and now you have to make it manufacturable. You have to have it meet regulatory compliance. It's got to meet safety and crash. It's got to meet aero, performance, all the other all the other needs of the vehicle. And the easiest thing to do is say, you can't have that, or you can't have that, or we need to change that design or that design to go to a tried and true off-the-shelf design solution, right?
Uh-huh.
We were extremely focused on this program and not doing that. The goal of this program was enable the design. And again, it goes back to the North Star, right? The North Star is the best Cadillac SUV we've ever put out there. I trust our creative design team to have the pulse of the customer as it relates to the design and the styling of what that means. And so my job then was to work with the engineers to say, how might we enable?
Uh-huh.
And it was just a constant, yes, we can, how might we enable? And so when I put the production Lyric next to the show car Lyric, I am extremely proud.
Actually, you mentioned how hard it is to do that. Another thing that was obviously really hard is pulling ahead the program by 9 months.
Yes.
It's usually the other way around.
Yes.
Things usually get delayed. What did you have to do to achieve that?
We had to make sure that every team member working on it was all in, because it was a very intense last year and a half to pull that 9 months out. A couple of the things we did, obviously, as you'll notice, our debut edition is one trim. We let the team really focus in on doing the first trim, the debut edition, and doing it right. We let the manufacturing team really focus in on launching one trim level and doing it perfectly. And then we start bringing the other trim levels on after that. But it really was just laser focused, I will say. Complete support from the senior leadership team up to and including Mary. If we needed something, we got it, quite frankly, on this program to get this vehicle launched ahead of schedule, because the demand was so high. When you look at the hand raisers, we had like 250,000 hand raisers when we debuted this vehicle as a show car.
Mm.
So we knew that the sooner we could get it out, the better we would be able to satisfy our customer base. And so it was really just, what must be true, what do you need to make it happen, and how do we get you those resources along the way?
Great. Any final thoughts you want to share?
I'm just really excited. I'm so glad to hear that you were able to drive it today. I can't wait to hear your thoughts. I'm really excited for your viewers to get to ride it, drive it. I think the vehicle, quite frankly, speaks for itself once you get in it and you experience it. And, I really appreciate the time today.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
And then any final thoughts that you got for this week?
No final thoughts for me.
All right.
I'm devoid of thought at this point.
Devoid of thoughts. Wow. Rough day for you, Robbie.
It's 9:48. I'm ready to go back to bed. 9:48 a.m., not p.m., a.m.
All right. Yeah, we start early on Sundays for Robbie.
Poor Robbie. Well,
I was like, yeah, it's the weekend. And then I'm like, oh, I got to get up at 7:30 on Sunday.
Yeah.
All right, well, that'll be
fun. Sorry.
That'll be
Sorry,
fun.
Buddy.
At least I get to hang out with nice people.
Aw, well, we love you too.
We love you too. We try. We try to.
Oh, I was talking about the people at the coffee bean and tea leaf. No, I wasn't.
Oh. Never mind.
You know what? You know what? I'm done with him. Forget it. Let's schedule for 8 a.m. Eastern next time.
I don't even drink coffee.
All right. We'll talk to you all next time.
Bye guys.
Bye.